Welcome to Money Grows on Trees.
Money does grow on trees.
A podcast full of practical, real-life money lessons that you wish you learned in school. Lloyd is a former lawyer turned lifestyle entrepreneur. In each episode, he'll be answering the tough questions around money, investing, and entrepreneurship to help you transform your money mindset and move you closer to achieving your financial goals. Now, let the class begin. Here's your host, Lloyd Ross.
All right, welcome back to the show. Money Grows on Trees podcast. My name is Lloyd Ross. This episode is titled Very Special Guest Episode. I'm here. We're doing a video podcast now, which is super exciting. We're here in a great little cafe locally. I'm here with a great friend of mine who's going to share so much wisdom on this episode. It's Mr. Mark Blundell, the man that missed the concept, the person my dad calls Mr. Dynamic.
Well, there you go.
So welcome to the show.
Thanks, Lloyd. It's great to be here. I'm sorry I don't have my elevated enthusiasm with me. I think I've left that at home, but no, thank you for being here.
Thanks for coming. I know you're up here from Sydney, so for everyone who's listening to this or watching this, Mark has visited. He actually rode up here from Sydney on a Hayabusa road bike, race bike, from Sydney to the Gold Coast. It's like a 12-hour ride.
It was a good ride, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Really, really good ride.
And do you think you're going to ride it back or put it on a truck?
At this stage, the jury is out about how it goes back. But it was a tremendous opportunity to spend a bit of time. And I think everyone needs to do that. Spend a bit of time and think about, well, what's my purpose? What's my goals? And you can gain so much clarity being on your own and in your own space. And 12 hours is a long time to have a helmet on, thinking in your head about, you know, how to optimize whatever situation is going on for you.
Yeah, because you can't really do much else on a motorbike but think.
That's right. That's right.
So you did some soul searching on the way from Sydney.
I don't know about soul searching, but certainly solved lots of challenging thoughts and ideas in terms of what I want to do in my entrepreneurial quest. So, yeah, it was a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, great. Well, I'm so glad you came because we spent the reason this episode came about and we just launched into this video podcast is because Mark and I spent, we were supposed to have breakfast together on Friday.
Yeah.
Well, we did have breakfast on Friday.
We did.
It turned into lunch. It turned into dinner. And I dropped Mark home at 6 o'clock.
Without a sip of alcohol.
Single sip of alcohol.
That's right.
Yeah. So, so I'm really excited about this show. We've been talking about the show for a while and Mark's just always jokingly says, going to get me on the show? I'm like, well, I don't often get that many guests, but the ones I do get are very special guests. So I'm excited now to actually do it. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I wanted to, Mark is it really is a dynamic man. He really is. And so I am excited about what's going to come out of his brain and his lips today in the show. But what we need to do is edify you a little bit. So as much as I do know about Mark, we're going to learn a bit more about his career and how he came to be the man of success he is today. But I just want to say that he's been a very successful businessman in many careers. He's even been in radio. He sold a number of policies and became an award-winning agent in the insurance industry, which he'll no doubt delve into. But most importantly, he has really become one of the world's leading digital marketers, helping so many people discover their message and bring it to the marketplace and absolutely explode their business across different careers, and also helped us in our property business many years ago to actually transition to inbound traffic and really transform that business. So you've actually had huge success on a global level in digital marketing, which is fascinating because you don't seem to me like you're a millennial. So we'll delve into that as well.
I knew that about extreme bully.
It's been a hard journey. So Mark, do you want to just take us back to like, how did you get into business? What prompted you to want to make money and build this freedom life you've got right now?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of an ugly duckling when it comes to my family because I grew up in a very conservative family. My parents migrated into Australia. They just had very sedate jobs. My mum was a librarian. My dad was an administrative assistant. So I didn't really grow up in an entrepreneurial or aspirational household. I grew up in a survival household. But I was always unique had a unique perspective on life to that of my parents and that of my upbringing. As long as I can remember back, I always had this attitude that if someone else was doing something or had something that I wanted, it was a metaphor for me to be able to understand I could achieve that. They just knew something about the process of acquirement that I didn't. And so nothing was ever beyond, in terms of my imagination, beyond my reach, right. You know.
So everything was figure-outable in your head.
Absolutely, because someone else had figured it out, and I never saw anyone as better or worse than me. I thought, well, we're all blessed with, you know, an amount of intelligence, an amount of enthusiasm. So if they could do it, so could I. But the difference between them and me was they knew something about it that I didn't.
So you never really suffered from anything like unworthiness, like you're not worthy of it, or
well,
you didn't deserve it. Anything, any of those mental barriers?
Yeah. Look, I can tell you, I grew up in a household that was very understated. And so, you know, my upbringing was very much, you know, my mother's, you know, main catch cry, lovely woman that she is, but her main catch cry was, you know, people who want too much end up with nothing. So I was actually the opposite of that. But that is ingrained in you at some point in life. So in terms of when things went wrong or didn't go my way, or I found myself in a worse position than when I started, invariably that dialogue, and I think it happens for everybody,
yes,
that dialogue becomes quite loud and yes, difficult to ignore. So yes, I'm sure I've confronted just as many challenges as anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting too, because a lot of people who are successful don't come from successful households.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps, yeah, I don't know what that is. There's probably a whole PhD paper we could write on that, and research we could make. But it seems like you didn't let anything get in the way of your career or where you were going to go.
Well, in terms of what I wanted out of life, which was always a really full experience of life. We're here on this earth. We have all these opportunities available to us. Why should you? My thinking has always been, why should you deny yourself of those opportunities just because of the way you think?
Right.
Because it's not about how you think. It's about what you're capable of and what you can make possible.
And so it sounds like you didn't want money for money. You wanted money so you could experience all parts of life and live a juicier.
I'm the guy who always wanted to see what it looked like at the top of Mount Everest.
Okay.
Right. So it was never enough for someone to say, you know, Mark, I've been up there and it looks like this and here's some photos.
Yeah.
I want to see that view for myself. So, and then I've always had a philosophy, and I think it's just been ingrained in me. It's not even a philosophy. It's just how I am. If you're going to do something, do it to its limit. Do you know what I mean? Why temper it? Why not take anything you're doing to its limit so that you can see what the view's like at the top of Mount Everest rather than just be satisfied, I made it to base camp.
Yes, which explains why you took the Hayabusa and you rode to the Gold Coast instead of up the road.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's
like, wait, let's see what this is all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
So that's, I think that's their primary drivers in the way I am and the way I think.
Okay. And so what compelled you? Because you got into business at quite a young age.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was the transition? Did you ever have a job and then got out of it? How did you find your way into business and learn how to start making money?
Okay, so because I came from a background with not much money, and can I say, interestingly enough, I was never any good with money. In terms of, you know, I'd get my pocket money and if it was $2 or $5, I'd spend all of it. So this notion of, you know, save a little bit for a rainy day never wore well with me. And so I always found myself in a situation that, you know what, if I wanted something extra, I couldn't rely on, you know, the savings that I'd accumulated and leverage those. I had to go and find another way to make more money to satisfy the things I wanted to do. So I got married very young. I had a child at 21 years of age. And I can say that throughout my working life, I've actually never had a job. So I've never received a paycheck. I've never received a holiday pay. I don't know what that's like. A sick day paid. Like, I've never had a job. I've never been an employee.
What are you doing to make money at 21?
Okay. Well, it comes before that.
Right.
When I was very young, I suffered from ADHD dreadfully. All of my mates did brilliantly well at school.
Yeah.
So today they're professors, yeah. they're accomplished scholars, and they were my mates. And so when we finished school, they all went off to university to pursue their, you know, their studies and become professors and doctors and lawyers and all of that sort of stuff.
All of them.
Well, there you go. And I thought, well, you know, that opportunity is not available to me because the marks that I got at the end of school didn't allow me to set foot on a university campus.
Mm.
So I decided at that point in time, well, you can still make your way and you can still keep up with these people, so to speak. You want to keep up with your mates, but you're going to do it a different way. And so what I invented to do when I finished school was to hop on a plane and head to Central Australia to live.
Right.
So I knew one person there. I don't know why I actually went there and what I was looking for, but I'd visited Central Australia before, and it presented as a place that, like, nothing disparaging about, say, living in Alice Springs, but, like, the majority of the population in Australia does not want to live in Alice Springs. And by virtue of that outcome, you could get jobs where the similar job in a capital city required some sort of qualification or some sort of experience. Initiative got you that job in Alice Springs.
Yeah.
And so I was able to land roles which were extraordinary. My first experience was I worked in a little youth centre, and this youth centre got a government grant. Now, my job in the youth centre was to serve at the canteen,
right,
to kids on school holiday programs.
Yeah.
And this youth centre got this grant to do things. Now, at the time, indoor cricket was a really big thing in Australia. I'd heard about it and I'd never played it. And so conversation around the staff and the person who ran this youth centre came to the fact that, you know, we're going to get this grant, government grant, what should we do with it?
Mm.
And I put forward the notion of, why don't we buy fishing nets and turn a roller skating rink into an indoor cricket pitch where we could roll out some astro turf and all of that? And they all looked to me and said, that's a good idea. I don't know where the idea came from, but I just thought I'd contribute to the meeting. And so that came to a reality. And of course, as a result of that, the role to promote this indoor cricket opportunity to people to come and play and all of that landed with me. So I started using initiatives like trying to get onto the radio through the sports program and talk about brand new to Alice Springs is this indoor cricket sport, and et cetera. Anyway, so it wasn't too long till 1/10 of the whole population of the whole town was playing indoor cricket at least once a week. Now, at the time, there were 27,000 people. So there's around about, competitions six days a week, people playing cricket.
Wow.
Anyway. So to cut a long story short, as a result of that, some developers from Queensland decided to build this built-for-purpose indoor cricket arena, and they were looking for somebody to build it and run it.
Wow.
And so I saw an ad in the paper going, you know, we're looking for a centre manager, and I thought, well, that has to be me.
Yeah.
So I think it was about 18 or 19, and I applied for the job, and I went for the interview to these two developers. Like, I was 18 or 19, they were 55, and they roll out the plans, the blueprint, because this centre hadn't been built. And so do you know about building? Because we're actually looking for somebody to build this centre. We've got a budget of $250,000,
right,
and we're looking for someone to build this. And I'd worked for a week as a brickies labourer. So, I know about building. But again, it was that thinking that, well, what I don't know, I can go and find out from someone who does.
There you go.
And
right.
And so ultimately landed this job to build this thing.
That's amazing.
That's where I learned to negotiate with people. We had to sell signage around the cricket centre.
So at any point in time, did you feel like you could have failed at that? You were going to get found out?
At no point. There was always this constant in my mind that if someone else could do it, I could do it.
Yes.
And what I didn't know, that knowledge was available from someone else.
There you go.
Always.
So you had this, Dan Sullivan talks about this mindset that I think is probably the best mindset to have if you want to scale your productivity and money and business. And that is, don't ask how, ask who.
Yeah.
And so you had this notion very early in your life that you could actually just ask, well, who's better than this than me, that I can engage to do this for me.
That's right. I don't need to know everything.
Right.
And often, and I think this is a great metaphor for life. You know, often we set goals for ourselves that fall into a puddle because we can't and we don't know at that moment, well, how. You don't need to know how. All the knowledge in the world is out there.
Yes, right? Particularly now.
Yeah, you can find out how in due course.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a sense of purpose and a very crystallized goal of what the end result looks like,
yes,
right, first, and anchor your efforts to that,
yep,
right, the how then just happens. It materializes because innately we ask questions of people to get the answers that we don't have.
And we can ask those questions on line now with ChatGPT, YouTube. So it's even, would you agree, it's even easier?
Well, today, absolutely.
Than before,
absolutely.
So there should be no real reason why people can't ask those questions and get good answers. Mm-hmm. Like that happened to us yesterday when we became instant overnight video podcasters because we went and found out some stuff from the JB Hi-Fi guy, got some intel, went to the other JB Hi-Fi, ended up getting all the things we needed. On the way to the JB Hi-Fi, we were looking at videos on YouTube to the best camera, the best. And here we are one day later doing this at hopefully a reasonably professional level.
Looking good so far.
Yeah, it's looking good so far. See, Mark is our very first ever video podcast guest, I think. Well, actually, we have had Simon and some others on here, but formally we're going to do this more. So anyway, example of that in action. And I agree with that more than ever now. So you had this early experience of, well, I created something. I then learned how to promote it. And these opportunities came to you because you were living in a place in Alice Springs where there probably wasn't a lot of people with that mindset or that ambition.
Mm-hmm.
So you created opportunities for yourself by saying yes and figuring it out later.
100%.
This is what Richard Branson talks about a lot.
And I think also just looking back, and I wasn't conscious of this at the time, but I can look back as an older guy now and go, the other thing I also learned was if you're targeting a market, like there's some online entrepreneurs, no doubt, listening to this podcast. Like if you're targeting a market, go where the friction is less.
Yeah. Go where the fish where the fish are and go where there's less
friction. Go where there's less friction.
Less competition.
Exactly. Yeah. And go there. Extend yourself and go to there. And you know, work with people who are also easy to get to. You know, a lot of people work in niches where there aren't many people and they're really hard to get to and all of that, and they undermine themselves. So that ideal of, okay, how can I make what I'm trying to do as easy as possible is also an important thought process in my journey.
Because some people have the opposite notion where they say, well, why make it easy when I can make it so, so difficult?
Yeah.
And say, right. I want to avoid that. So having that early step, how did you then transition into, because I know you ended up getting to know my dad and being successful in insurance. How did you transition from building indoor cricket centers effectively and managing and promoting them into, like, what happened next?
Okay, so after 4 years of being in Central Australia, I met my then wife. She'd had a child, and then we decided to move back to my hometown, which was Sydney. And so I got a job in another indoor cricket centre, which was just simply a stepping stone for what do I do next.
Yeah.
And so in looking for a new job as such, because I've always been employed as a contractor in those roles. I was never an employee. I was a contractor. So I started looking for jobs. And there was the Commonwealth Employment Service at the time, which was the place for people looking for work. There wasn't SEEK and all of those sorts of things. So you'd go into, if you like, a government area. And on pin-up boards, there were all different jobs. And so there was a category for commission-only jobs. And, of course, because my world had been around that, I was naturally drawn to that. Now, at the time, I had very little money. I had no car, a wife who wasn't working, and a child. And so what caught my eye was on this board, training manager, $25,000 plus company car. This is back in 1986.
Right.
And so I'm thinking to myself, this is meant to be commissioned, but this sounds more permanent.
Yeah.
So I inquired of, you know, that advertisement, and I went for an interview. And so it turns out that the position was actually not quite as it read or how I interpreted it. the commission, the position was to sell life insurance, of which I knew nothing about, no experience, and superannuation or retirement funding. And you worked in this place on commission, and after you've been there you for a period of time, 6 to 12 months, you qualified for a car loan, right? And there was the potential of making $25,000 a year, right?
Oh, good so marketing.
It was great marketing, but it had me. And I thought, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
And so, interestingly, I signed up and they took you through a psych test. Now, I went into this office and can you imagine there's 30 or 40 insurance agents all toiling away at their desks.
Yeah.
But they are all my age today. They were all in their 40s, 50s and 60s. And I'm just this 19, 20-year-old, 21-year-old at the time going, I could do this. And the guy who interviewed me talked about, you know, these guys drive nice cars and they go on amazing holidays and they do this.
Just which paint the vision for you.
Captured my imagination. And he's gone, but you've got to do a quick psych test first where they profile your personality. And the result was proceed, but with caution when it happened to me. But I wasn't deterred by that. So in my head, what I calculated in that result was, well, of course, proceed by caution. If the average guy's 40 to 45 to 50 and I'm 21, well, they're going to say proceed.
Yeah, of course.
So it didn't present as an obstacle to me.
Yeah.
And so I went home after signing up and I rang my best mate and I said, I've just got this job, blah, 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 blah. And he says, funny about that, I need a superannuation policy.
Oh.
And so I said, I can do that.
Wow.
The same as I said to the developers, I can build that. So I went to see him. Now, the way the commissions were structured at the time, if someone put in $1,000 a year, let's say, into their superannuation, there was a tiered commission structure, first year, second year, third year, fourth year, fifth year. But because I was new, they used to get new agents on their feet. They used to advance you year four and year five in advance, right?
So that was nice.
So in the end, I ended up earning about $1,000 commission
from a $1,000 policy.
Now, I was told if this guy doesn't pay for a period of time, you're going to lose your commission.
Yeah.
Right. So I thought that's okay. So this guy gave me a check for $1,000. And in my first day, I made $1,000.
Wow.
Now that was fantastic because I thought to myself, I was only earning $300 a week at the old cricket center.
Yeah.
So I'm now entitled to 3 weeks holiday and I don't need to go and find another one now. Right? Well, that.
Yeah.
And I took that time off.
Yeah.
And then I got to a spot of going, well, you know, I better start working again. I've got to sell one of these policies again. Who do I go and see? I have no idea. And so that was the first brick wall of where I start to get hungry.
Right.
No idea. So that's how I came into the insurance business. And I started to spend some time learning about financial services, financial markets, money, the use of money, and, you know, got the hang on that. But I had no idea about how to exploit this opportunity. In other words, how do you go out and create conversations with people so that it can give rise to exploring where there's an opportunity to, you know, maybe sell a life insurance policy to them or a retirement.
So back in those days, you couldn't just DM someone in Instagram and say, hey, and start having conversations.
No DMing. There's no scraping lists. There's no mass email marketing. Keep your fingers crossed. There's no posting on Facebook or what
happened. Is there any phone marketing back then?
There's no, well, there was phone marketing. So you could get a phone book and start a day.
Okay.
In fact, that was what the manager told me to do.
Okay.
There's the phone book. There's a ton of prospects in there. Go for it, start a day and let me know when you get to Z. You know what I mean? So,
So
I started ringing people out of the blue, cold calls, which I absolutely hated because I could put myself in the shoes of these people I was calling and go, well, if someone rang me with this pitch, I'd cringe, right? So I faltered through the first maybe 3 months, just barely getting by, being given advances, you know, based on the manager's belief that one day I'll make it.
Wow.
But I wasn't really making any money.
Right.
And I still recall this to this day. It's very, very vivid. I remember going into my office and once a month, they used to circulate like a monthly, not newsletter, because it was a glossy covered magazine, this insurance company I worked with. And on the front cover of this glossy magazine was this guy named Lloyd Ross. And so here was I struggling to survive. And there was this byline or subheadline on this thing, you know, selling, making 20 sales a week or something right. just extravagant and extraordinary beyond comprehension. However, given the frame that I see things, I looked at that and I thought, if someone else is doing it, he just knows something about doing it that I don't know.
Yes.
So I need to learn what that is. I need to gain proximity to this guy. Now, I can tell you something about life. If you make your goal
yeah.
the most dominant thing in your mind, life has an extraordinary way of corralling you and pointing you in the direction so that you can be at the footsteps
yes.
of exploiting that opportunity.
Yes.
It just happens that yes. way, right?
The universe conspires to help those helping themselves.
100%.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I grabbed one of these magazines. I took it home. I just thought, this guy, how do I? Now, I lived in Sydney. This guy lived 800 kilometers away in a place called Tamworth.
Yeah.
And so I thought, what am I going to say? I can't ring him. What am I going to say? Hey, mate, how you going? Et cetera. And so I remember being stuck for a while trying to figure out how to get a hold of this guy. But in life's brilliant way, if you want something enough and you just focus on what you want, it delivers an opportunity to you that you can either choose to take or not to take.
Yes.
And so I remember one Friday thinking to myself, I am actually going to have to go back to that same government department and ask for some food vouchers.
Wow.
Because I just had no money to feed my family. And I'm in the office feeling fairly down and flat. And lo and behold, in my office is the guy from the front cover of the magazine.
Oh, just my standing. God.
And I just thought, like, this is got to be divine intervention.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking to myself, he's not going to want to talk to me. He's not going to want to talk to me. And I'd go, shut up, Mark. Just say hello.
Yeah.
And so I went to say hello and I said, hey, gang, my name's Mark. I saw you on the front palm. Just really inspired by what you do. I want to learn more. Do you think you can spend 5 minutes with me talking to me about what you do? Now, the gracious man that this guy is, your dad, and how benevolent he is with his time and willingness to help other people, he said, sure. And he took me into a spare office and he spoke to me for, I reckon, around 30, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
But he gave me a framework to pitch that was well beyond my, hello, I'm just calling you to do da-da-da pitch, right? It just revolutionized the frame at which I could enter conversations with people. That 30 minutes, it was maybe 30, 35 minutes. I was so grateful because it all made sense after that. Again, giving rise to this notion that everyone else holds the information that you're seeking. You just need to go and seek them out. And that's why it's clever to listen to podcasts like this, because this is today's version of accessing that information. Yeah. And so I remember that was a Friday, right? On the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of the next week, I sold 3 policies. I made $3,000.
Wow.
And from there, my trajectory in the sales business was on, right?
It just 30 took minutes. It. Just,
30 minutes. Yeah. And it's just framing. It's just like, I've just got it now. Yeah. I get it. I get it. If he's doing it, I've got to be able to do it. Let me listen. And so you listen intensely without a filter of, but you're better at speaking it than I am, or you've got this quality that I haven't, or trying to make some judgment that really is of no help whatsoever.
Yes.
Just being an absorber. This guy's doing it. If you want his outcome, do what he's doing.
And
that's
I think
it.
For the audience too, in those days, it was about one policy a week was the average,
if
right?
If that. Yeah.
Yeah, if that. So you just 3x the average one session.
And so from there, I thought, I need more. If that's what I got for free, imagine in 30 minutes, what could I get for more? Now, I still didn't have much money because there was a period of time till your commission came through, till the policies were processed. And so I rang Lloyd and I said, how do I spend more time with you? And he said, well, you can come and shadow me for 2 days.
Wow.
Which just means sitting in my car, watching what I do. And I thought, I am just a sponge to learn how to do this. So I said, how much is it? And he said, it's $2,000 to do it. Now, I didn't have a cent. Remember, I'm thinking about...
So back, this, what year was this?
1986.
So my dad was selling consulting coaching back in 1986.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That was a high ticket offer.
Absolutely. And it speaks to... You know how often when we're selling high ticket offers, we go, they won't have the money to pay?
Sure.
Like what? Again, everything is a learning experience. Like Lloyd could have gone, Mark's going to get food vouchers. Maybe I did tell Lloyd about how much I was struggling at the time.
Yeah.
He still said, it's this much money.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people stall their business because they go, I won't make that call because that guy is not going to pay, or that person's not going to pay for this or that and the other.
Yep.
So I won't contact them.
Right.
But if you talk to a guy like me, who desperately wants the end outcome, human nature is that if you want something enough, you will find the means to do it. And so I didn't have the $2,000. So I went to the local bank and I told them, hey, I want to borrow some, how do I borrow $2,000? Because I've got to go to a conference. I told them. Anyway, the bank manager said, here's an overdraft.
Right.
Right. And so I rang Lloyd. I said, I've got the money. How do I pay you? Right. Now, I didn't want him to think of me as some sort of dumbass with no money.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I thought I need to assert my intelligence with him. And he said, mate, send me half now and half when we catch up and work. Right. So I thought I'd be really clever. So what I did was I wrote a check out for $2,000.
Yes.
Right. And I tore the check in half and posted half to him. And said with a little note, I'll give you the other half when I said it.
No, that's very memorable.
Right.
I think he told me that, actually.
Yeah.
That's what you did.
And so, you know, that really set me up for this is how you learn and this is how you get what you want.
So you learned how to learn.
100%.
And you realize that the best way to learn is to find out who has what you want, who's better at this particular thing than you are, and how do you get proximity,
mm-hmm.
and then how do you pay for proximity, and then how do you actually model that?
100%.
And you figured that out in the 80s, whereas now that's a little bit, maybe it's not as widely known. I've spoken about it on the show, and I do that, but you seem to have figured it out very quickly and done a great job of it.
Yeah.
So that's the first step of how you ended up getting so effective.
Yeah. And, you know, in this process, you have to look at your emotions. You know, people sometimes, when things don't go their way, they've put in a whole lot of effort to do something. Maybe an investment doesn't go the right way or what have you. And they're left feeling in an emotive state.
Yep.
I feel depressed. I feel flat. I feel dejected. I feel worthless. I feel all of those things. Now, I felt those things too, but I never looked at them with a negative frame. So even then, I never became my emotive state.
Right.
My emotive state was simply something that I felt. I didn't define myself by my emotions, right? They were just something I felt. And emotions like that, while they're difficult to endure when things don't go right, and like here I am married with a kid and I'm going to get food vouchers, right? Emotions like that are there to give you a bit of a signal.
Yes.
To tell you what to do.
Yes.
Like they're telling you something. Do something different, alter, change, push. All of those sorts of things. So even at that younger age, I had the wherewithal to not be defeated by my emotions.
So you use your emotions as a signal to pivot and move in a direction rather than be defined by them and let them
beat
you up.
Yeah, and not pivot. You know, impulsively. Pivot with thought.
Yeah.
Pivot with going, well, I feel this. What's it trying to tell me? What do I need to do?
Yes.
Not come to a conclusion of, this is shit, I'm wasting my time.
So not be triggered by it,
no,
but be informed by
it. Absolutely.
And then make intelligent decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that too. That's exactly how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's how you're supposed to navigate emotions.
Well, I think so, but people don't understand their own emotions.
Yeah.
You know, they get out of bed in the morning and go, and you might go, how are you going? And they go, I feel shit. Why do you feel shit? Because I'm just got up feeling like this.
Yes.
And it's like, well, no one just gets up just because feeling like this. There's a reason. And if you can not become your emotions, but become an observer of your emotions and see yourself as a vessel experiencing a thing like a cold, right? I don't become the cold. I have a cold.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so observing yourself and observing those emotions and feeling them, I think that's really important. A lot of people run away from their emotions because they're uncomfortable sometimes, right? But they are so good signals.
Yes.
In order, and you should listen and validate how you feel, no matter how stupid it is.
Yes.
It's telling you something.
Yeah.
It's telling you something. And so through the examination of those things at a young age, I sort of learned, how do I command my emotions to my benefit?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I became very sensitive to, or self-reflective.
Yes.
What am I feeling? What's this trying to tell me? What do I need to do?
Right.
Right. Okay. Rather than being flattened by, you know, the whole emotion and the whole overwhelm and going, I feel this because what I'm trying to do isn't going to work. I'm not worthy. What was I thinking?
Yeah.
Do you know, all of that sort of stuff. So, so I was able to transition out of working with your dad for a couple of days and learning from him and just going, I've got the frame. Yes. Now I need to do the work.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to come yesterday. It's not going to come in a second.
Yes.
There's a journey.
Yeah.
You know, I think Lloyd at the time was making about 800 grand a year. Like, it was extraordinary amount of money at that time.
Yeah.
And I was respectful enough to know you didn't get here without going through the same journey I'm on now.
Yes.
Right. And I think you need to be respectful. You know, we love looking at people who've accomplished great things.
Yes.
But people fail to recognize, do you know what that person went through to get to there?
Yes.
Right? And it's the ability to tolerate the pain of the journey that guarantees the outcome all the time, all the time. Just the ability to tolerate the pain. And the pain is not a signal to run. The pain is a signal that you're on the journey. You're on the right track. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay true to yourself. Develop a greater sense of self. Yes. You know, invest in personal development. Learn about yourself. Learn about how you're working. Take inspiration from other people.
Yes.
But understand those people who got to the top of Mount Everest still had to endure blizzards. They fell.
Yes.
They had self-doubt. They had all of those things.
Yes. There's no one went through a shortcut. Or no one went through instant success. And if they did, it was luck at the start, and then they went through the blizzard.
100%.
So everyone has to go through. There's no shortcuts. Well, in fact, the long cut is the shortcut, I would say.
I would agree with that. And, you know, there is no shortcut, but there is joy at the end of the journey to endure the hardship that you went through. You develop a great sense of self.
Yes.
And you become respectful of yourself if you can look back objectively and go, look what I did to get to here.
Yes.
I'm proud of myself.
Yes. So would you agree then for the audience that it actually, when you do hard things and you volunteer to do hard things and you stay with the hard things, that's what actually builds self-esteem and self-worth.
100%. That's the only way to get it.
And skills.
That's right. I can't read more books to develop a greater sense of self.
Yes.
I can only judge myself by what I do.
Yes.
Do you know, not how I feel.
And the ability to endure rejection, humiliation, embarrassment, frustration, all those things is what carves you as
absolutely
a person of success.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Excellent. So you were able to get some mentorship early in your journey in the insurance business. You obviously did really well after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us how you ended up. It's a little bit of a, probably a long journey. We could be here forever talking about this amazing journey. But what, so from insurance, did you then go to a different career after that? What happened to the insurance industry? What led you to digital marketing, which is what you do now, and how, like, what was the bridge? How did it sort of evolve?
Sure. So out of insurance, when I finished working in the insurance industry, I ventured into advertising. Advertising. It's just selling.
Yes.
You know, and what advertising is selling other people's products to their clients, right?
Yeah.
So I totally understood, like, how do you pre-position something? How do you pitch something? How do you, you know? And what I also learned from having so many sales conversations in the insurance business and so many rejections is And I've been very always, I'm analytical. I don't beat myself up with failure. I go, what is this trying to teach me? What can I learn? So every sale that ended up in a no or a rejection, there was always a post-mortem that followed. Absolutely. In my head. Yes. All the time. Yes. All the time. Yes. All the time. I'm aiming for mastery here. You know what I mean? So what I used to do was look at all the no's I'd get. And then I came to understand that people make decisions based on emotions first.
Yes.
And then logic.
Justifiable logic.
Right? Yeah. And so I thought to my advertising and my success in advertising and marketing came by understanding that an advertiser just wants to sell more products, wants to sell more services.
Yeah.
But for that customer to buy, I need to say something, do something within the marketing that moves them emotionally.
Yes.
Now, if I can move them emotionally, then I can get them to buy. And so my success as a marketer and an advertising agent, if you like, came from that understanding. You know, if you look at how we're made as human beings, like if you're sitting in a place that's quiet and working away on your computer, and all of a sudden just behind you hear this big bang, bang, you'll jump, right? Yes. And you'll turn around and you go, all right, it was just the door swinging, you know, in the wind. That's the emotion working first.
Yes.
And then the logic coming in. Now, if we analyze that frame, look how long it takes for the logic to actually meet the emotion. There's this period of
lag,
right?
Yeah.
But what created the movement? The emotion.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Oh, the emotion the person felt.
Yep.
So if we're selling something, right, we need to move the customer. We need to move somebody. So the way to move them the fastest is by pitching to their emotions first.
Yes.
And then underpinning it with logic, right? So I developed that skill of being able to write and put forward propositions, which were just sales propositions once again, where I focused on, hey, don't edify this product or service and try and stack that and hope that you'll make the sale.
Yes.
Do you know it comes with this, comes with this, comes with this,
features,
comes with this.
Stack with the features.
Da, 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 da. Think about how this thing or service changes someone's life.
Yes.
And paint that picture for them.
Yes.
Now, you can't paint that picture for them unless you understand what their life is like right now.
Yes.
And understand the workings in people's mind, the number of conversations that an individual has with themselves every day of the week.
Yes.
Like, how many conversations do you have? I'm this, I'm that, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to catch up, that person pissed me off, this isn't working. Yeah. I need more money, I need
thousands
to do this. So we have thousands of conversations. So understand your marketing or your pitch or whatever has to intersect with somebody's thought process, because you need to have and embed yourself in that conversation stream with someone.
So you need to inject yourself in their conversation.
In an existing conversation that they're having. Right.
Yes.
So you don't want to go, hey, have you ever thought of this? Let me showcase this. You want to be able to look at it and go, what are they thinking right now? And how do I enter their conversation stream so they go, that's exactly what I think.
Yes.
Or what, that's what I'm thinking. Or funny you mentioned that.
Yeah.
Because I blah, blah, blah. And so I developed my skills marketing in practical ways and advertising in practical ways there. And then when digital marketing became a thing, given my age, I'm a bit of a Luddite. So my kids had to show me how to get on Facebook. But I looked at this platform, at Facebook especially, and I've gone, Facebook doesn't replace the television.
No.
It's not the newspaper. It's not the new form of radio. Facebook replaces that telephone call.
Yes.
That we used to have with people.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So how do I incorporate my knowledge and understanding of achievement and getting and helping people to get what they want and marketing and advertising into this new medium?
Yes.
So I could capture their attention.
Yes.
And get them to move.
Yes.
In other words, to take up the call to actions of the pictures that I created.
Yes.
And so I thought, well, same thing as in the insurance days, someone else has the knowledge. I need to go and gain proximity to that person.
Yes.
And so I came across a guy at the time, you might have heard of him, called Sam Ovens.
Yes.
Sam owns school with Alex Hormozy today.
Yes.
And so in the exact same way as the Lloyd Ross episode. I found my way to talk to Sam Ubbins.
Yeah.
I paid him $50,000 right, to go and sit in his office in New York. Yeah. Same thing as shadowing Lloyd. Yeah. Exact same story once again.
Yeah.
And just immersed myself. And I thought, okay, Sam's no more intelligent. I'm not trying to take something away from Sam, but if I view him as my equal,
yes,
right, and don't give myself, you know, put an anchor around my leg by going, oh, yeah, but I don't have what Sam Ubbins has, and just view him as my equal, I can then become open and unfiltered in just absorbing what he's got to say.
Yes.
And all I need to do is do what he does.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes.
That's
Model
it.
Him.
Just do what he does.
Yeah.
And so I spent 2 years working with Sam, learning digital marketing and learning how do you leverage the algorithm and mediums of text, copy, emails, video to capture people's attention. Now, I looked at it and I go, with my innate skills that I'd already acquired, coupled with this weaponry called digital marketing, which at the end of the day is just an amplifier.
Well, it's just leveraging on a bigger level, isn't it?
That's it.
Yeah.
So I stepped into that realm and started to accomplish these outcomes that today I accomplish for my customers.
Yeah, and you've had some big, like you've done Tony Robbins stuff in Australia here.
Yeah.
You say his events coming here, you've marketed for him.
Yeah.
Some other big names like you in the industry as well. You've really brought their message to life and they've had tremendous success.
Yeah.
And so you've not just learned yourself, but you've actually applied that to other people's businesses. And what I think is really cool about this story is that because I came back from Dubai and started working with my dad in the property business, and the entire marketing landscape shifted from outbound, which is where we used to do it. We had a whole telemarketing team.
Yes.
It was outbound. It worked for 2 decades, effectively. And then all of a sudden, like it was almost like a blockbuster moment. Like it's now not working because the DNC came in, the credit act, everything changed.
Yeah.
So we had to pivot. And what's fascinating about the story is I remember seeing some of your stuff once. I had a conversation with Dad and I said, hey, we should talk to Mark about how we can start to integrate some of that stuff into our business.
Mm-hmm.
And what is cool about that is 20 years later, we're paying you to show us.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
it. That's it. Yeah. Like it all came back 20 years later.
And luckily we had direct deposits, so I didn't receive a half a check.
How do I know that? Dad should have sent you half a check. I didn't know the story. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating because I knew that it was possible, but I didn't have the ability with the technology to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, that's absolutely pivoted and transformed that entire business.
It has. It has. Right? And from that, I've honed my skills. And then the next, you know, part of what I've tried to do is trying to be in the property and finance space.
Right.
I wanted to be the world's best digital marketer.
Yes.
So they're people who are inspired by wealth and wanting to grow their wealth, whether they invest in stocks, whether they invest in property, whether they invest in whatever, right? There are sellers of information and there are sellers of product, okay? So what I was able to bring to the sellers of those who wanted to grow their own businesses was a know-how of how to tap into the emotions of their end customer and how you need to package and put together, you know, and present what it is you're trying to present to them and get them to buy in a way that manifests in their mind. So to deviate from here's this feature and it does this and it does this and does this, to learn the concept of planting a seed in someone's mind, right, and then acknowledging that person for having a level of intelligence such that their own mind will manifest the meaning of what I'm trying to say in their own world.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. So you said to me the other day, because we spent all day together, and you said there was a process by which you inject a message into someone, in a process by which they release their own message based on the questions you ask them.
Yeah.
So they paint this story or their vision in their own head and then make decisions that way themselves.
Yeah.
Instead of you injecting it, you're proposing questions and they're figuring it out.
Correct, correct. And it comes from, you know, I think you should have, in relation to people, if you're in a people business, right?
Is there any other kind?
Well, I don't know. you could be the, no. But if you think about it, I think a lot of people approach people judgmentally.
Absolutely.
Right? But if you can approach people with curiosity, right? curiosity rather than judgment.
Yes.
Except we're all different. You know why? By virtue of the 70,000 conversations we have within ourselves today. I mean, if you yes. think of any persona, there are so many versions of you that actually exist out there. There's the you alone. There's yep. you with your intimate partner. There's you with your friends. There's yep. you on a work scale. And yep. there's you public perception.
Yes.
Right? There are five different yous. And yep. you're a different being each time,
yeah.
which is different conversations. So for you to form a judgmental view on somebody, you're just forming a judgment of a sliver that represents an element of their overall being. So it's yeah. pointless to form a judgment.
Yeah.
So asking questions mm. to see how their world works gives you the greatest opportunity to exchange ideas
yes.
and to progress yours potentially, you
yes.
know, if you're in a selling environment or what have you.
Yes.
And so I think it's important to love people on that basis and not be judgmental. And that comes part of accepting who you are
yes.
as an individual,
yes.
to not be judgmental of you
self.
Either,
yes.
right? Because we reflect what's going on in our mind. We project. It's like, you know, that person who's maybe dubious about you ripping them off, right? That's a reflection of their own experiences
yes.
and their own frame
yeah.
rather than what you're actually doing
of themselves.
That's it. And their own past experiences, their childhood experiences, etc. So often I'm as a curious person, by listening intently, people reveal themselves to me and create an extraordinary opportunity for a sale.
Yeah.
And so if you're in a sales business or entrepreneurial business, once you understand people in that way, what ends up happening is the magnitude of success or the strike rate that you get in selling things and pitching things, right, has an extraordinary ratio to the point where I can say in my world, and I've positioned myself as the most expensive person in my space,
yes.
right, because I value what I do and I see the results that clients get. They get extraordinary results and my inputs are there. I'm in business like everyone else is yep. in business to make money. They can't pay me the world's greatest fees unless they're getting the world's greatest outcomes.
Yes. Right?
But I look at their circumstances, and these days, because I approach with a curiosity layer and don't tend to judge people at all, I would say that my strike rate is virtually very close to 100 out of 100%. Now, not because I'm a brilliant salesperson, but because I know where to pick my mark.
Mm.
And so I've transitioned from, you know, where you're just out there on the hustings, hustling, I've just got to try and get people in.
Yeah.
I just take a step back and I can go, that person's my client. That person's my client.
Yeah.
You've
really refined your ability to qualify
mm-hmm.
and not just qualify, but really understand the person so well that
mm-hmm.
not only are they having that pain you can solve
mm-hmm.
for them,
mm-hmm.
but you've also articulated it in a way that also motively moves them to mm-hmm. take action at the right time in their life.
Absolutely.
And that's why it's 100%, you know.
100%.
100%.
And so I think the learning here is that if you're out to grow your wealth, if you're out to improve your money position, it matters not where you'd be.
Yes.
Do not judge yourself,
mm.
but firmly become fixated on the end outcome.
Mm.
Have a great ability to be able to imagine in your own mind what the end outcome is going to look like for you. And then permeate that into a level of self-belief and conviction. That is, my journey is to that point.
Yes.
Whatever happens in between is just part of the journey.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It's just, it's like when I got on the motorbike, my destination was the Gold Coast. Whatever yeah. happens in between happens.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm
saying? Yeah, and there would have been times that you told me the other day you wanted to turn back. You kept going.
Look,
you kept going.
As an older guy, the concept of sitting on a motorcycle for that long, it's just crazy. I probably didn't process it enough before I left, but certainly after an hour into the ride, and all that free time, I started processing and started talking to myself and going, Mark, this is insane. You cannot do this. And it's just all that self-talk.
Self-talk.
You know, I often talk about the greatest challenges you confront in your life, it's not you versus the world, it's you versus you, right? Agreed. And riding the bike, like I'm talking to myself in two voices. One is turn around, go home, maybe get in your car or fly. And the other is, no, this is good for you. You need time on your own. Stick with it.
Yes.
Stick with it. Yes. And you know, our experience just tells me that the option of sticking with something,
yes,
and pursuing something is, yes, most likely to deliver the outcome I want.
Yes.
And so I loved that whole experience.
Yes. Well, it's funny because then on the other side of that is all these cool experiences we've had in the last couple of days.
How good's that?
Which has been awesome. So I felt like we were in our own little private mastermind on Friday.
Yeah.
Which was great. And as a result of that, I know you're going to be doing some cool things and developing your own podcast, mm-hmm, and writing a book, mm-hmm, and all sort of amazing stuff. And I'm certainly going to be doing, I've already started implementing some of the stuff we spoke about.
That's fantastic.
Which has completely transformed how we approach almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad that you stayed on the motorbike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm glad now we're doing a podcast.
I'm glad I stayed on the motorbike. Okay. But I think and through that time, I listened to a few of your podcasts and what you're doing and the information that you're providing to people, right, is so much more than just entertainment value. Your capacity to be able to explain concepts, thoughts in meaningful ways is outstanding, and it's tremendous the contribution that you are making to your audience.
Thank you.
Right, in taking this profound, incredible wealth of knowledge that you obviously have, and being able to put it into terms that are meaningful for people just starting out. And, you know, I was listening to the podcasts, a few of your podcasts on the way up, and even some yesterday, and thinking to myself, what an outstanding opportunity for the listener to be getting this information. They really want to gain proximity to someone like you, because at the end of the day, do we want something to go take a long time or a short time? Yes. You know what? If you do it yourself, you'll figure it out eventually. The cost of doing that is so expensive compared to the cost of acquiring proximity and information. And that is just an undeniable truth about growth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's what I love about your story. It shows that because you've experienced that, you live that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now even just learning more myself, like, how else can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so the listeners, I think that's a great message to pass on to them, is like, well, there's a cost of delay,
mm-hmm,
there's a cost of figuring it out yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're a byproduct of actually transcending that.
That's right. That's right. It's sort of like going to the dentist with an abscess under one of your wisdom teeth and being in agony. And he goes, now I can get you out of pain in 5 yeah. minutes or 60. What would you prefer?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah. it's like, well, there's an obvious choice there.
Yeah.
Do you know, one is going to cost you less than the other, but yeah. the offset of cost is extraordinary pain.
Yes.
And so why endure the pain?
That's right. And people don't tabulate that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take it into consideration. They just see the cost of the current cost of decision, but mm-hmm. it's the cost of indecision.
Absolutely.
Or figuring it out yourself.
100%.
Yeah, I agree 100%. With that. Yeah.
And so, you know, in the wealth mode and earning more money mode and the acquirement of more knowledge mode, you have to understand that everything you want is in the hands of other people.
Mm.
All the money of the world,
yes,
is in someone else's hands.
Yes.
They're going to spend that money. If you're selling something, they're going to spend that money anyway.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't they spend it with you?
Yes.
Right? And if you want to learn how to do something better, why shouldn't you spend money just gaining proximity and watching someone who's achieved the sort of success that you aspire to have?
Yes.
And I think that's so important.
Yes. And it underpins this one sentence you told me the other day, which was, Lloyd, you know, I'm happy to do a podcast episode if it's about money, but I just need you to know that I've really not worried too much about managing it or multiplying. Now you've got a beautiful house in Sydney and you've got wonderful assets. You've done, obviously built wealth, which is wonderful. But you said to me, I just focused on making so much more money that those things didn't matter as much. And I think that's a great lesson to pass on, that what should people be focused to maybe get your last bit of wisdom when it comes to money. What would you be focusing on if you were new?
Okay, so I would look at things and I go, okay, starting from a platform which accepts I'm just me. I have my about my personality. I have my positives and I have my negatives. What are the things that are most likely to get in my way of me achieving my goal? And how do I put a crutch under those things so that they don't get in my road, right? So that's the first way of thinking. And if a lack of knowledge is one of those things, go and buy the knowledge. Go and acquire the knowledge, right? From someone else. Go and find someone and say, teach me what you know, because once I know it, I can do it. So looking at, well, what are the things in my road that are going to get me, stop me from getting what I want in the shortest possible time? Now, in terms of, my own money management and all of that sort of stuff, I haven't been good. I'm not this great saver that perhaps my parents were. Do you know what I mean? I didn't, this savings ethic didn't come good with me. And so I always thought about it and thought, well, that's a shortcoming,
sure,
right? So how do I offset that? Well, I'm going to acquire the skills to learn to make enough money that my desires can always be satisfied with the money I make.
Okay.
Beyond the, to a reasonable expectation.
Yes.
So in other words, I'm now positioned in a situation where I'm really comfortable because my imagination about the things I want doesn't exceed the capacity of earning money.
Yes.
Right? So I'm at an equilibrium, yes, which is peaceful.
Yes. Well, that's what Epictetus said, to become wealthy, desire less.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually position your desires at a place where you know you can earn them.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
amazing, right. Fantastic, yeah. Wonderful, excellent. Mm. All right, well, Mark, you know what? I think it's just been so great having you on the show. Our new video podcast, this has really transpired because of Mark, because he stayed on the motorbike. But I just want to say, you're spending time with me and spending time here and talking to the audience, and how you speak to people, how you speak to my wife, Alicia, today. It's just so... it's addictive, I would say, is a good word. So be careful hanging around with Mark, because he's addictive. You can speak to him all day long, and he can talk and I can talk. So we could talk forever on the show. But I just want to say a massive thanks for making the time to come on. Thanks for investing in yourself and becoming the person you have been, because it's really helped me. It's helped Dad. It's helped a lot of other people. I mean, obviously, it's helped a lot of other people. Mm-hmm. So, your desire to become better has now helped a lot of other people, now helping out people in our audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to say thanks so much for your time. And where should people find you? Where's the best place for them to reach you if they want to? What's the best place for them to find more about Mark?
Look, I don't have a great big... One of the things my clients say to me is they go, you're the most expensive bloke out there, but to try and find you is really difficult, right? And so you can go and find me on social media. I have a business called Mortgage Sales Mastery. I have another one called Attention Street. But I'm sure a good Google search, Mark Blundell, will find you. And I'm not the racing car driver.
Okay, right. So it's different Mark Blundell.
Yeah.
So this is racing to be great at marketing.
Yeah.
If you want to hang out with Mark, you become great at sales and marketing and life, I think, for that matter, too. You've got so much wisdom. We'll do another episode at some point together, because there's more in here in Mark than what we've even discovered here. We're just warming up, but we'll pop the link to his Instagram in the show notes.
Thank you.
And then they can find you, and then I look forward to doing this again at some other
point. I'm thrilled, and I want to say generally humbled that you've decided to take this opportunity to chat to me, and I appreciate that.
Thanks. I'm sorry it took so long to get you on the show.
It's all good. It's all good.
All right, over and out. Hey, see you guys on the next episode of the Money Grows on Trees podcast.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Money Grows on Trees podcast. If you like the show, you might want to check out our book, Money Grows on Trees, which you can find at LloydJRoss.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave a review, and feel free to reach out to Lloyd on Instagram at LloydJamesRoss.